Welcome to the Original Gangsters podcast. I'm your host, Scott Bernstein. We're bringing in our resident Canadian underworld expert, Ken Pereira, for another deep dive into the constant chaos that is the modern day Canadian gangland landscape. Just when we thought things were that violence was over and that war was behind us, and you had the war with the Rizzuto mob and the Hells Angels coming to an end in December. That was the last time you were on. But now there is two more wars. You got the Hells Angels continuing to battle it out with Blood Family Mafia, minus any co-signing by the Rizzutos like they had been initially. And then you have the Rizzuto mob, who looked like they were going into peacetime for the first time in a while, is now back at war, but with the street gangs and Tupac Atna of the Rap Pack mob. Ken, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the accolades. I don't know if I'm that much of an expert, but I try to keep in touch.
Oh, you're the expert. We go right to the source. We go directly to the source, and you are the source. For people that might not know, Ken is a famous whistleblower, a former union leader, and had to deal with the good and bad and the ugly of all this stuff that we talk about in the Canadian underworld. And he fights the good fight and has a lot of perspective and context to add. Before we go any further, let's just mention that things are happening, you know, at a rapid clip, like they always seem to do over on your neck of the woods. And there was a murder the last couple of days in Burlington, Ontario. A high-ranking Hell's Angel. And we don't know what this has to do with right now. We haven't heard any motive or context. But Craig McIlquam, who went by the nickname Truck, was in the Niagara chapter, one of the more powerful guys in the Niagara chapter, close to Marty Robert, and Marty Robert's Lieutenant Teflon Rob Barletta was gunned down on Tuesday night and pronounced dead at the hospital. Have you heard anything?
Not much. What you just told me, you know, just before we start, I want to tell you something. You know, you shot some accolades towards me, but last week here in Montreal, in a national newspaper called La Presse, which is a French Canadian owned newspaper, they spoke about you. They spoke Daniel Renault, which is a very known investigative reporting, especially in the underground world, said, listen, that your story about the truce between the Rizzuto family and the Hells Angels was true. Phoned me directly because he wanted to know your name, your full name, and your podcast, but didn't mention it.
Didn't mention my name or my podcast. Just referred to me as a podcaster from the United States in Detroit.
From Detroit, exactly, which I kind of found funny. And that's why I wanted to shoot you some accolades, because in La Presse, if the story came out, it's because he must have listened to you, must have read what you said, or what you told, and he confirmed it in another sense, but he did really confirm that there was a major rendezvous in a restaurant downtown where cops here in Montreal were following it from day one. And it was just throw you a little thumbs up because you deserve it.
Well, thank you for noticing. Journal de Montreal yesterday also, without referencing me, referenced that the war was over with between the Hells Angels and the Rizzuto mob. You know, for people that are into this stuff, we're the go-to, because we were in front of it. We were reporting this in December. And now the mainstream media in Montreal are reporting this in May or at the end of April. And again, I don't want to pat myself too hard.
But you should. You should.
We're giving you news that's going on in real time in the Montreal, Quebec, Canadian underworld here from the across the border. We're letting you know within days, within week, or you know, not within weeks or months. We're letting you know within days what's going on. We have great sourcing both on the street and in law enforcement. And I'm proud to say we're way ahead of the curve in the reporting game out there. And it's a lot of fun to report, even though it's violence filled and horror filled, but it makes for a great reporting narrative.
Don't forget, and there's a lot of eagles everywhere. So, you know, when a podcaster from Detroit has a scoop of a major story in Montreal, you know, a lot of little eagles are hurt. So maybe that's the reason they didn't name your name or didn't call you up by just giving you a heads up. You know, hey, the original gangsters gave us this 5-6 months ago. So it was kind of funny that I heard about it and I read it, and then we spoke.
I had a lot of people sending me that, guys that are my sources on the street, guys like yourself, guys in law enforcement. So people that know, you know, if you're in the know, if you know, you know, yeah. You know that even though we're not based in Canada, you can come get your, you know, most exclusive insight into what's going on in the, at least, I don't want to say the whole Canadian underworld, because I don't really have my finger on the pulse of stuff that's going on the West Coast. But in terms of Ontario and Quebec, in terms of the Rizzuto mob and the Hells Angels and some of these other groups, you're not going to get more exclusive or in-depth than you're going to get here.
Absolutely.
And I believe we've been on top of at least a half a dozen major stories in the last year that either the Canadian press reports well after us or doesn't report at all.
Well, I guarantee you that a couple of your stories that came out will come out in our major newspapers in a couple of weeks or even in a couple of days, you know. So we'll see where it goes and we'll see if they give you kudos. But it's part of life, you know. I mean, you guys personally have major contacts, because this story was a major one because it was a truce, you know, between the two factions, the two most important factions in the last 30 years in Montreal.
Last 40.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, 40. Yeah, Rizzuto.
I'd say Vito Rizzuto started to make those connections and build those ties to the Hells Angels in the early 80s.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know why I didn't say the Hells Angels? Because at one point, I think the Irish mob, the West End gang, was pretty influential, you know. So that's why I said, you know, the Italian mob was always there. It was very influential since the Catronis and all that. But
well, they're all working together again. I mean, that's coming out on the other side of, you know, it was 26 months of war between the Hells Angels and the Rizzuto mob. Within that, you have the Blood Family Mafia jump in Quebec City. That feud is still brewing and popping off, despite the fact that there were two what looked to be peace agreements that blew up in 24, one in the spring and one in the fall. But the war is still on between the Hells Angels and the Blood Family Mafia. And Blood Family Mafia, from what we understand, is expanding in real time. They're growing, and you have little pockets of Blood Family Mafia that are starting to pop up outside of Quebec City and in other areas around both Montreal and Toronto. So that's something to keep an eye out on.
Scott, I really do compare this a bit to what's happening in the industry, the construction industry. I feel like the mob, even the Hells Angels, are the general contractors, and these subcontractors are tired of working for them. You know, they're ready to move on and become a bigger piece, and starting to, they said they're tired of maybe taking, you know, that smaller envelope. So there is a huge confrontation with the major players.
Well, let's also put it into a context of time. If you're a 25-year-old gangbanger right now, or let's say any gangbanger that's under 30, and you're in one of these groups, what's your real reference point when it comes to the Rizzuto mob empire, when they were the Roman Empire, when in the exactly. 80s and 90s and most of the 2000s, when Vito Rizzuto was able to keep all of these groups working together and not killing each other and everybody making money. And then we've talked about this on previous podcasts that I've done with you. He gets on a plane in, I think, 2006 to go serve time in the United States. And he says, as he's getting on the plane, "You're shipping me out of the country. You guys don't know what you're doing, because the second I leave, everything's going to fall apart."
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's what happened. And it's 20 years later, and it's never been the same. So what I'm saying is, if you're somebody that's 30 right now, you were 10 years old when Vito Rizzuto left Canada.
Yeah. So no reference points.
There's no reference. So now who are the so for now, for a guy that's 25, 30, the Rizzutos is a group that one time was a big deal and has been, you know, kind of, I don't want to say they're crumbling or falling apart because they're still formidable, but they're definitely a shadow of what they once were. And they don't have the reverence or the intimidation factor that they always had on the street. And a lot of these young guys, they don't care.
Absolutely. They want to make a name out of themselves also. And I think they underestimated that maybe the third or fourth players coming in, like maybe the Mexican cartels, you know, who are helping out maybe in some way, some of these factions, or even the Middle East area, the Lebanese and right. all that, that seeing that there's a little hole and they can go right through it. And, you know, don't forget, you know, if you don't have people coming up behind you to support the big locals, well, at one point you will not be able to be on the streets as prominently as you were 20, 30 years ago. And that's what I see here in Montreal. There's a lot of new players, and they're tired in a certain way of saying, listen, I want the piece of the cake now.
Well, and you mentioned the Middle Easterners. The Arab Power crew is now a player. And absolutely. they went from 0 to 1,000. They didn't exist 10 years ago. And in the last 10 years, they have built from the ground up. And now they are, from what I could gather talking to sources, they pride themselves in kind of being mercenaries. They don't work for any, you know, they're not aligned with the Hells Angels. They're not aligned with the Rizzutos. They're not aligned with the West End Gang. They work for everybody. And one minute they might be trying to kill you, and the next minute they might be killing someone for you.
Yeah.
Exactly. They do contract work for everybody. And that's kind of by design, that they're not going to be in anybody's camp. They're going to be, you know, open to the top.
Highest bidder. Highest bidder. Exactly. And that's why there's KOs on the street. You know, I'll give you a little stat so people understand. I went to look up some information about fires, criminal fires in Montreal in the 2024 last year. Okay, so I can't speak about this year because the stats haven't come out. But there's 407 criminal fires in the Montreal area last year. 151 on properties and 96 on vehicles. Okay, so that's about 250. So there's about 150 of them that are, you know, on land, on other stuff around restaurants and all that stuff. So, and this meaning, you know, these are tactics, you know, to manipulate real estate, insurance fraud, maybe, but extortion on property owners, you know, expanding the areas. So Montreal is getting really, really violent in a really fast way. And nobody really wants to talk about it, you know, because it puts the KO, it scares people off, scares the, you know.
Bad for business. It's bad for tourism.
Exactly. Exactly. Don't forget, you know, the cannabis retail locations, legal and illegal, are being looked at. Nightclubs and restaurants are being, you know, put on fire. There's construction and renovation. And the construction areas, renovation and illegal and the sectors are all, there's a lot of them also sites being put on fire. So if you put all of this all together, I would love to find out who owns these restaurants, you know, who owns these cars, who owns these houses that are being looked at. And I think you can have a pretty decent idea who's doing it.
All right. So let's drill down into some stuff that's happening like. Right now, we mentioned the Hells Angel that was killed on Tuesday. Monday and Tuesday, at the same time this Hells Angel was killed, there is a series of fire bombings in both LaSalle as well as St. Leonard. And the belief is that they were targeting Rizzuto mob businesses. And I don't believe in coincidences. If something looks like that A plus B is going to get you C, that's probably where we're at. And about a month ago, we had the arrest and detention of Pietro D'Adamo, aka Black Pete, who we have reported, and we were the first to report that he is now the underboss of the Rizzuto mob. Got promoted in 2024 from a skipper, a capo, who ran the south and the west sides of Montreal. And now he's in the administration. And in short order, from what we've been told and what we've been reporting, Pete D'Adamo was an X factor in getting the war between the Hells Angels and the Rizzuto mob stopped.
Yeah, and the story of what you came out with the restaurant and the meeting between the Hells Angels and the Rizzuto clan.
And this was all orchestrated, from what we understand, by Pete D'Adamo.
Yeah,
He was the diplomat. He was the dignitary that got everybody to the table. He's a guy that traces roots to the Solicito faction of the Montreal Mafia, but also somebody that came up working for the West End Gang, working for the Maddox brothers, doing collections for the Maddox brothers when he was a young guy, kept his mouth shut in a collection that went wrong, where a guy ended up dead, doing a collection for the West End Gang. Pete D'Adamo ended up killing someone kind of by accident in trying to extort some money from him. The guy had a heart attack while they were accosting him to get him to pay up his debt. And Pete D'Adamo swallowed the sentence, didn't tell anybody that he was doing it for the West End Gang. And he's done prison time for that manslaughter, as well as a drug case that he took with the Solicitos. And he's dating Leo Rizzuto's sister, Bettina. And she is an attorney, and like Leo, she is somebody that's very sophisticated and more polished. Comes, you know, they're mafia royalty. So Pete D'Adamo is.
It's a great way also to protect client and privilege, you know. So you're talking to a lawyer at the same time.
Yes.
You can pass stuff, some information on, and, you know, the judiciary system here in Montreal and Canada will not be able to bring you to court for it.
So it appears that Pete D'Adamo's arrest and on a gun case, he's being held without bond, was arrested, I think, on March 25th or March 26th. Traffic stop, seems to be based on a tip that the cops knew that D'Adamo was traveling with a weapon that he shouldn't have been. It looks like it was targeted. They pulled him over. He's with Larry Cooney, who is a very major Irish mobster. And they're both, neither of them are allowed to be in possession or near a firearm. Cooney's bonded out. I think there were four or five guys that were arrested in an armored SUV, but D'Adamo was the only one that's still locked up. They're denying him bond. And he's under attack. There were three businesses that were bombed in LaSalle. That is his home base. His right-hand man, Joe Arcaracci, a.k.a. Joe Cheese, Big Joe, was arrested earlier this month in a big drug and gun case. And then we're being told that this new war with Tupac, Atna, a.k.a. Tupac, and his Rat Pack mob, we're being told that they have contracts, that Tupac has contracts out on Pete D'Adamo, Leo Rizzuto, that D'Adamo and Rizzuto have contracts out on Tupac and his guys. So everyone's trying to kill each other. And that they're worried that D'Adamo could be exposed in detention. And we know that there's been poisonings in the past.
Ponytail, right?
Ponytail, and then another Hell's Angel, I believe Greg Woolley. I believe they called him Curly. Killed a Hell's Angel in there via poisoning. So, what do you make of this? It's the one war ends, and then Tupac and his guys, who had been a major part of that war and had been switching sides. Tupac was originally in the Rizzuto camp underneath Greg Woolley, then joins the Hell's Angels camp during the war, is one of the, he's one of the suspects in the Greg Woolley assassination in November of 23. Then at some point in 24, the Hell's Angels and Tupac fall out, and Tupac goes back to work with the Rizzutos, and that lasted a couple months, and now we're told that they're at war. What do you make of all this?
Listen, Gregory Woolley, before dying, I think I heard it from you or somebody close to you, but he said, listen, these guys are uncontrollable. Remember, he said before he died, and he was talking about the third entity. He wasn't talking about the Hells and surely not about the mob. So he was talking about the new up and coming groups. So what I'm seeing is, and I think I said this before, I see an alliance, a forced alliance with the Hells Angels and the mob, because this surgent third group, whichever it is, the Arab power or whatever it is, are becoming street very credibly important, and they will hit everybody from left and right. Don't forget, Adamo, if he's the man, like you said, that put up this peace treaty, he should be even renominated as the next big thing. And what happens to him? He's looked at as a target in prison. So who's targeting him? It's maybe the people that they don't want this alliance to be made of. So I think we're going into another version of the 1980s war between the Rockers and the Hells Angels.
Even though, let's say, the violence starts in 09, it's now 2025, so it's been 16 years. You've already reached the numbers in terms of casualties. You might have already exceeded the numbers in terms of casualties that you had in the Great Quebec Biker War between the Rocker, or between the Rock Machine and the Hells Angels. That lasted 8 years. We're already at 16. Now, that was one war fought between two combatants. This is like six or seven different wars, different iterations of the same war. But it all started when Vito Rizzuto left, and then his family comes under siege.
They look a bit like the terrorist groups, you know,
yes.
They don't have a personal cell, you know, we can't touch them personally and saying, oh, this is, they're controlled by these guys, especially it looks like if, you know, they all have, you know, you have your little sanction, I have my little one, and we're combating under an umbrella, but nobody knows really which umbrella it is, like you said at the beginning. So I think it's going to be really tough to distort, because we saw Al Boivin, we see Pic Turmel, we heard all about these guys, you know.
We're gonna get to them in a second. We're gonna
talk.
But I think one point I want to make, piggybacking off of a point you made about how some of these street gangs are more emboldened than they've ever been in the past, where they've always been, you know, second fiddle or always deferring to whether it be the Rizzutos or the Hells Angels, and now they're wanting to kind of take steps up the ladder where they can be the shot callers beyond just the street. So first you have, you know, a foreshadowing back in 2009 when Nicky Rizzuto was killed, the first mafia prince to go down, Leo Rizzuto's brother. He's killed by Kenny Joseph.
Yeah.
Ducarme Joseph, a.k.a. Kenny Joseph. And, you know, Kenny just felt like with Vito Rizzuto in prison, I can start, you know, killing members of his family and I'll get protection from the people that don't like him. So this was a street gang guy that feels emboldened enough in 2009 to kill the mafia prince, which is Nicky Rizzuto.
Yeah.
Now, fast forward to the 2020s. You have a really unique situation, and I want to get your take on it. I haven't talked about this with you because I'm just starting to learn about it. That the Tupac group, and the group is called the Rap Pack Mob because these guys are all former rappers that became gangbangers, and you know Tupac Shakur is for my money the best rapper of all time, and Anna Atna took. The moniker Tupac as a street nickname. But what is setting the Rat Pack Mob and Tupac above and beyond maybe almost any street gang in the history of Montreal and Quebec is the fact that they've carved out a piece of the waterfront, a piece of the docks for themselves. And that's usually something that's controlled by Irish mobsters or Italian mobsters. And this is like all over North America.
Yeah.
I've never heard of a street gang getting turf on the docks or within the port of Montreal. But that's what I'm hearing. And that's giving them leverage because that's economy. And that's real economy, money that's coming through the port.
Absolutely.
So from what I can gather, and
it's a lot of power, man, a lot of power. Yeah. I mean, you're deciding what's coming out, you know, just out of the port also, you know, there's a lot of people working now in the port. They're not from Irish descendants. Do you understand? They're not also from the French Canadian background. Right. So they're more and more outsiders. I permit to say the word outsiders.
Yeah.
So that's why the Irish mob, especially the Irish mob, has lost a lot of its weight. Not because they're not tough. It's just they don't have as many soldiers as they used to have.
So Tupac and his guys have been able to get not the whole port. They don't control the whole port. But they have a piece of the Port of Montreal on the docks. They're running, according to the SQ and the RCMP, they're running a stolen car. International stolen car ring worth possibly, you know, tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars of luxury vehicles being sent back and forth between the Middle East and the port of Montreal. And the Rat Pack is controlling that operation. They were in business with the Hells Angels. They were in business with the Mafia. Now it looks like they're on their own. And from what I've heard and what I'm reporting, and I think I reported this for the first time this past week, was this the roots of this dispute that's going on right now between Tupac and his Rat Pack rap. I always say rat because that's where it comes from. The Frank Sinatra.
Of course, the Frank Sinatra.
Tupac's rap pack. The dispute currently with the Rizzuto mob stems from issues on the waterfront that they initially had with the West End gang. And Pete D'Adamo, as we mentioned before, has for 30 years has been the go-between for the West End gang and the Rizzuto mob. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'm learning more. And the more I learn, I'll come in and report it. But something happened on the waterfront that sparked an issue between Tupac and the West End gang, which then the ripple effects of that turned into this new war with the Rizzuto mob.
Well, your information is, above all of them. I mean, what I'm seeing from what I hear from you, mostly, I think they opened the door to the port. They must have brought some soldiers there, saying, listen, we'll give you this little port. And slowly but surely, like the areas, they're taking over, and they decided to say, or they saw that their cut wasn't big enough or, so it's money.
They have so much money. This is what I've heard. They have so much money to pass to spread around. They're greasing palms all over the waterfront, which is giving them.
Exactly. And don't forget, if we're talking about, the Lebanese area and all that, if the cars are sent to the Middle East, who has the connections with the Middle East? Right. You understand? So right there, they're saying, listen, I'm getting maybe 10% or 20%. I want more. And this is where I think it's always, follow the money. It's always the money. Yeah. So if they consider that they're doing a bit more, and they're getting less. I think this is your investigation will go towards that. I mean, that they want more because they deserve more in their sense, and that's where I see where it's going. And one thing I want to tell people: 20 years ago, my trade, I'm an industrial mechanic, and my local and all that, we installed almost every machine that used to verify the containers, so the containers would pass through this machine and we could see right through them. At that time, the dock workers were pretty influential at that time. And what I was told, one day out of seven, they used it. So six other days in Montreal, they were never using that machine that they could see what's inside the containers. Right. So if they kept the same thing as today, think about that. How many containers pass through Montreal? And that's why Montreal is so important. It's because mostly it's because it's
the waterfront in almost all of Canada.
Exactly. It's the open to the Great Lakes. It's an open source. And that's why the mob in Montreal, especially in Montreal, became so influential and powerful. It's from the 60s. It's with the French Connection, Marseille, and all that.
Make the analogy to the mob in the United States, the La Cosa Nostra. Who's the most powerful family in America? The Genovese crime family. What do the Genovese crime family control in New York City and New Jersey? They control the docks.
The ports. Yeah, exactly.
And they have, like you said, they have for 100 years. They've been the docks forever.
And it's kind of so easy to understand, the economics of the mob. They work like CEOs. You have to understand where they come from. What makes them so powerful? And then you say, well, they control what's going in, what's going out, even material. I mean, the construction area, if you don't have the material coming to your site on time, you're losing millions of dollars. So if they control what's coming in and what's coming out, or giving you, 2 weeks notices that this equipment is going to be late, well, you're going to pay whatever it is to get your equipment on job sites earlier or faster. So that's why they will, and they still have this great presence there, and this great power. And if the other clan finds out about history, well, the port for them is a major site to expand.
I just want to couple more things to touch on with the Rizzutos, and then we're going to move on to Blood Family Mafia. So another thing that's been reported is that in the days or maybe the week or two after Pete D'Adamo gets arrested and is denied bond, Leo Rizzuto leaves town and goes to Sicily.
Yes.
And I believe he's back now. But I would say this is, I wouldn't say it is, according to reporting by Journal de Montreal. I always, even if they're not going to source me, I'm always going to source them. That's just, I do think, you know,
a class act.
Yeah, I abide by you know, journalistic.
Yes, exactly. They called you a podcaster instead of investigating. Well,
Journal de Montreal has not referenced me at all. I've had conversations with those guys, but they've still yet to reference me. They actually wrote an article, I mentioned it earlier in the broadcast, that came out yesterday talking about the peace between the Hells Angels and the Rizzutos. They didn't reference me. The press referenced me. But anyway, Journal de Montreal has reported about Leo Rizzuto's, this is his now second trip they're reporting. And it appears, and this is just, I guess, self-preservation, that Leo Rizzuto went to Sicily right after his right after the failed assassination attempt to kill him in March of 2023, which broke the war with the Hells Angels out into the open. But again, I don't believe in coincidences. It appears that as things got ramped up again in Montreal in the early spring, late winter of this year, that might have also prompted another trip to Sicily, because he was in Sicily last month with an entourage, taking meetings with mob groups over in Sicily, just like he did when the war was breaking out with the Hells Angels. It makes me think that he's going over there to politic regarding the war with the Rat Pack now, and he couldn't bring Pete D'Adamo, who's his right hand, so he brings Vito Salvaggio, who I'm told is his former driver and is now kind of filling in for Pete D'Adamo as kind of the de facto number two. And I'm also told, I shouldn't say I'm told, the Journal de Montreal reported that he had at least three Calabrians in his
entourage.
So he's covering all his bases.
Listen, you know, I'm not in the no secret in entourage of the Rizzutos, but if he's going to Italy, in my opinion, is to get some support.
Yeah.
To get some people to help him out or to support him or to speak in his behalf and in a certain way to protect the brand.
So let's use this as segue to Blood Family Mafia. David Icepick Turmel, the new age Canadian crime lord, that no matter what happens from here on forward, he has cemented a legacy for himself
as
one of the most fearless underworld leaders the country's ever seen. Guy's only 28 years old, and at 25, 26, he decided to take the war to the Hells Angels.
David and Goliath, almost, you know, in a certain sense, you know.
And this young cat goes around Quebec City and gets almost all of the street gangs to consolidate under Blood Family Mafia. In a very short period of time, Blood Family Mafia, BFM, has become a brand on the streets of Canada that has a lot of weight and has a cool factor that I don't think the Rizzutos has. Maybe the Hells Angels still has, but there's a cool factor of wanting to be affiliated with these guys. And Icepick Turmel goes to war, gets indicted, goes on the run, and then gets apprehended in March, I believe. He's apprehended in Rome. We had been told that he had been gallivanting throughout Europe
and
North Africa, for a big chunk of his time on the run, he was aligned with the Rizzutos. This is when the Rizzutos were at odds with the Hells Angels, and it's like, you know, your enemy's enemy is your friend. And the Rizzutos were helping hide him. The Rizzutos are from Sicily. He was caught in Rome, Turmel was, and it looked like he was doing business with Italian mob groups up there. But it would tell me that he was no, but just judging by the you know, the geographics of where he was not in a Rizzuto stronghold.
No, he wasn't.
Like he had exactly. been in the past. So that also kind of tells me that what I was reporting, what had been reported, that the Rizzutos were no longer co-signing him, and he needed other Italian benefactors. But he's caught in Rome. Do we know if he's back in Canada yet?
I don't think he's back in Canada yet. I think he's still being he should be extradited in a couple of days or something, but he's not in Canada. I think he's still in Italy.
So he's going to eventually make his way back. It doesn't seem to have dampened the spirits of his organization.
They
keep on fighting. And as we said, they keep on expanding. There's been like 24 Blood Family Mafia subunits that have popped up in the last year across Canada. But I will say, this guy still has a contract on his head. $500,000 contract from the Hells Angels because of an attack that he orchestrated from overseas, where he had some of his guys kidnap nephews and cousins of powerful Hells Angels in Quebec City and cut off their fingers and toes and ears. Which is just like, just saying it is mind-blowing.
Exactly. Can I add something to this?
Yeah.
You know, Vito, Rizzuto, Gotti, all of these guys had something in common. You know, they had charisma.
Yeah.
And at 28 years old, whether we like him or not, whatever it is, to regroup all of these guys, very young, he needs to have some sort of charisma. You know, Pic Turmel, you know, he really does. Because you can't, your younger guys, everybody wants to elevate themselves. And this guy could regroup all of them. So he has much more than just, you know, a flair. He has some sort of charisma that people follow them and all that. And what I see also what happened in Italy is what's happening here in Montreal. I mean, these guys don't care for who they work for. They will go and meet anybody and say, hey, yes, exactly. And say, you know, their loyalty is to themselves, you know, so there is no upper hand. So maybe the Rizzutos helped them. Well, they're going offhand somewhere outside Rome, which wasn't Rizzuto's, we could stranglehold or whatever. And he started negotiating with other people. That might have been also why he got caught, you know?
Yeah. I believe the rumor, and this doesn't mean it's true, but I believe the rumor is that somebody in his own organization tipped off law enforcement, who then tipped off Interpol. That they knew where he was going to be, that there was going to be some type of drug deal that went down, and that they took him into custody based on that tip. We know that he has empowered some guys in Canada to run the show for him. What we're hearing is it's kind of a three-headed monster, two guys that are within the Blood Family Mafia ranks, and then one guy who's an affiliate, Al Boven, who you mentioned, yeah. is kind of a organization all within himself.
He's on the run.
He's on the run. Well, all three of these guys are the guys that Pic Turmel has tapped to run things in Canada. All three of them are on the run to some degree. So you have Al Boven, and then you have two guys that are BFM lieutenants, Tommy Bernier Thibault and Nathaniel Bernard. Nathaniel Bernard is from east Quebec or east side of Quebec. And then Tommy is from Montmagny.
Sorry. Well, it doesn't matter. It's really close to Quebec also. It's about 250 kilometers to 170 miles from Montreal.
And they call him Tommy Montmagny. His name is Tommy Bernier Thibault, but his nickname is Tommy Montmagny because that's where he's from.
Exactly.
He's on the run. He's a fugitive as well. Nathaniel Bernard is under indictment. But these are the three guys that are running things for Pic Tremel in Canada. He's going to eventually come back and, you know, the Hells Angels can get to you in prison too.
Absolutely.
But he's got his own guys in prison. I got sent to me a video. I don't feel comfortable showing it. It's pretty brutal. But I got sent to me a video that was shot in prison on an iPhone with somebody that was identified as one of Ice Pic Tremel's main guys.
Yeah, he got beaten up pretty badly.
Getting just demolished by a couple of getting kicked and punched. And this was right after Tremel had gotten apprehended. So it doesn't seem like it's going to de-escalate with him coming back to Canada and going into the prison system. I think, if anything, you could have a prison war on your hands.
Absolutely.
That's in companionship with the war on the streets.
There's one thing you can add also. Sometimes, you know, the information that we're getting is filtered also by the police, you know? So they want an inside, a little war inside. So the information that maybe somebody from the inside ratted out Pic Tremel, you have to take that in consideration that maybe, you know, it's just to throw that outside before he comes to Montreal, you know, and they want to talk to him. Same thing happened with the hitman, Silva.
Freddie Silva
was arrested, you know. After that, they started giving information on the streets, and a lot of people got shot, including Woolley and a lot of them. And I think it's a direct link to the information that came out by the newspapers.
All right. So let's finish up this pod talking about, you know, I don't even think it's opinion. I think it's fact. The most powerful organized crime figure, not just in Canada, but I'll say around the globe. Marty Robert, the Montreal Hells Angels boss, who him and Walter Stadnick Nurgut over in Hamilton, they control all of Hells Angels Nation around the world, not just in Canada right now. The power in that group for the first time in its existence is no longer going through the United States, where the group was founded in Northern California. It's now going through Quebec and Ontario. And so that's, you know, that's quite the responsibility, where this is more Marty, because Nurgut is kind of the shadowy godfather, Wizard of Oz, that stays, you know, it stays in the background. But Marty is not just running the Hells Angels in Canada. He's running all 6,000 to 7,000 full patch members and 600 chapters on this planet. And he's doing a lot of international politicking. I can't imagine what this guy's passport looks like, if he's even using a passport. And there's been some news about him that's come out that's demonstrating how this guy is at a whole other level. And I want to get your take on it. And that news... Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying you're absolutely right. We saw a picture of him in a resort, and he has a tattoo of Moscow.
Right.
You know? So it's kind of...
Let me introduce it, and then I'll send it over.
Do it.
So right now, according to reporting, I believe it was Journal de Montreal. Excuse me if I'm wrong, and that's La Presse, but those are the two big French-Canadian newspapers that report the most in the underworld. For whatever reason, the Montreal Gazette is always the English speaking major media outlet. There seems to always be behind these others.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially in the investigative reporting in the crime, it's third.
It's very reactionary.
Yes, exactly.
But I digress. So news came out in March that in addition to Marty Robert being considered this omnipresent, uber powerful Hell's Angels crime lord, that the government in Canada, along with law enforcement in Europe and possibly the United States, are investigating Marty Robert for being a potential enemy of the state, in that he is being investigated, doesn't mean it's been confirmed, doing business with the Kremlin, doing business with Vladimir Putin and the leadership of Russia.
And the oligarchs.
And the oligarchs. As you mentioned, he does have a tattoo of the Kremlin and the word Moscow on his shoulder. He has taken over a half dozen trips to Moscow in the last 3-4 years. That's what we know as fact. The rest is conjecture.
Yeah.
How much weight do you put in the possibility that Marty's doing business with Putin?
Well, you know, if I would have a tattoo of the Hell's Angels on me, I think they'd scrub it off, right? There's an unwritten rule that you don't use a tattoo of any organization without being on it. You putting the Moscow tattoo on himself deliberately shows that he has an influence all over the world, and especially, you know, the Russian mob or the Russian mafia there. I think it's showing that what you said a couple of years ago, he's international. He is, you know, the main man. He's heads over what Mom Boucher wanted to be.
Yeah.
Because Mom Boucher, who died, wanted to be international. He really wanted to put a stamp on he was the most dangerous Hell's Angels ever, you know. And I think Marty Robert, in my opinion, is very business oriented. And I think he's a very smart man, of course. But
he's corporatizing the Hell's Angels. And
yes, he's a CEO.
Right. And I don't want to dismiss or diminish what Sonny Barger and George Christie did with turning the Hell's Angels into a brand that they could make money off of legitimately. So that was a corporatization of the group, but not like what's going on now, where you've had a domination of certain street rackets forever, but the Hell's Angels had never really made it up the corporate ladder the way the Italian mafia has. And under Marty's leadership, they're doing, you know, those kind of deals, white collar deals, corporate deals, where the money is so far beyond what you can make in gambling and extortion and drugs. That was one of the things I want to throw out there. And I think there's two things can be true at once. I think that it's true that Marty and his people are getting into the gas and oil black market, which is, again, that's just like you're talking hundreds of millions of dollars in black market or bootlegging of gas and oil. And I have heard from good sourcing that he's been working those kind of deals. I don't think that necessarily means that he's doing those deals with the Kremlin.
No, of course. Yeah, of course.
So I think it can be like...
But can I add something? I mean, in a certain way, you can also look at it and say, this is why they're losing the streets a bit. Because he's looking ahead. He's looking much higher.
He's a visionary, yeah.
That's it, exactly. So he's not looking at, you know, don't bug me with this, okay? Don't, almost like what Vito says, get out of this. I don't want to talk to you. I'm building a bridge in Sicily.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want, from Sicily to the mainland, $10 billion. We're not on the same level anymore. Don't talk to me about bookkeeping and sports gambling. So this is where I see... Marty Robert going, you know, he's going much higher. He's going with big, huge players. And this is why, you know, at one point you have to look forward. So you're going to lose some of your clout on the streets, because he doesn't really care about that anymore. I think he wants to bring them to Hell's Angels 2.0.
Yeah. And here's the flaw that I see in some of that narrative. And I could end up being proven wrong, but this is just my quick analysis from the initial reporting. So the belief from the government in Canada and some of the officials in Europe is that they're playing connect the dots. They don't have any confirmation that Marty has met with the Kremlin. They don't have any confirmation that Marty has met with this biker boss that they call the surgeon, Alex Zaldusnov. I know I just butchered his name. They call him the surgeon. He's the biggest biker boss in Europe. He controls a group and founded a group called the Night Wolves. They are kind of half 1% biker group, half paramilitary unit for the Kremlin, where they go do Putin's bidding and they help.
Ex-KGB.
They help with the annexation of Crimea, which is where the surgeon's from. And you're talking about numbers-wise, they're equal to the Hell's Angels. They have the numbers that put them at the same scale. And the surgeon guy is obviously one of the biggest, most powerful biker bosses
in the world.
We have no confirmation that the surgeon and Marty Robert have ever met. Now, you know, you kind of play the what's most likely game. They probably have met, but we don't know that for sure. And we definitely don't know, just because they met, that means that the surgeon introduced Marty to Putin. That's just doing the kind of connect the dots. Well, if this guy's with this guy, then he has to be with this guy. So there's no they acknowledge this. The government there's absolutely rumors and the belief that on these trips to Russia, Marty's been meeting with the surgeon, and the surgeon is introducing him to oligarchs and people connected to Putin, maybe even Putin himself. But none of that's confirmed. We have no confirmation that Marty's ever met with the surgeon.
You're speculating a bit.
The government is speculating that because there's a major biker boss in Russia that has direct ties to Putin, that if another major biker boss is coming into that area, that he has to be working with these other guys. Again, maybe that's true, but it seems like it's all speculation until we have. Hearing the report that he's being investigated as an enemy of the state, I would have liked to have more facts connecting him to the Kremlin, other than just a tattoo and knowing that he's taking trips to Moscow, which, by the way, we know there are Hell's Angels chapters in Moscow that he could be going there to do business with. It wasn't like he has no business in Moscow. So it seems to me like if you're going to be connecting him to the Kremlin, you probably should have had more meat on the bone than just a tattoo and visits. But
That I think it's more Hollywood style, like, you know, newspapers throwing that out, you know, really, because they have no proof, but they're throwing
that's the government telling the newspaper.
Yes, exactly. Don't forget, the cartels in Mexico are in the oil business more and more, right? So they're infiltrating mainstream, you know, they're controlling the roads, they're controlling all the areas, and everybody's paying that little piso. So
one thing we know for sure, if we want to start playing this connect the dot game, where was Marty last summer? He was in Dubai.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's a lot of oil deals being done in that neck of the woods. So
absolutely. And, you know, listen, remember the scandal, oil for food? with the United Nations. So do not be surprised. You know, everything is possible. Everything is possible. When you see the United Nations with Maurice Strong, which was a Canadian guy who did the scandal and got kicked out, and he finalized his last days in China because he ran away to not get caught. I mean, there's a bunch of these stories. To finish off, if you don't mind, you should get in contact with a journalist called Sam Cooper. Okay. He has the Bureau. He has a website called the Bureau, and he is an investigative reporter in Canada who is talking about, you know, these super labs, fentanyl here in British Columbia, in Ontario, and in Quebec. And I think this is a great guy to maybe to bring to original gangsters, because
right, he wrote his name down.
Sam Cooper, 20 years, at least 20 years, he's been showing the infiltration of the Chinese triads and all that inside the Canadian mob and inside the Canadian politics, but including the mob. So I think it's a perspective that you should look at, because don't forget the laws. I always say the laws make the mob.
Yes.
If the laws aren't, they don't give 20, 30 years here in Montreal, in Quebec. Right. They don't give you 100 years in prison like in the States. So no, that,
it's, you know, Marvin Womay, Casper the Ghost, the big Hell's Angel shot caller that was came out for a second and now has to go back in because he violated his parole. He was convicted of 14 murders and he did 13 years.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why it's flourishing here. And that you have to think about that also. Why is it so low? Because maybe our government also has stuff to hide, because, you know, the Chinese influence, the Mexican influence, the mobsters, we have a history of having our criminal minds very close to our political.
Marty Robert is a convicted murderer. He was convicted of murder within the gangsterism case that he took related to the Quebec biker war. He had to go do 6 years. Yeah. Pete D'Adamo, we mentioned, was convicted of a second degree murder. So these are, you know, guys that murdered people within the gangland space and didn't do that much time.
No, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Ken. I think we touched on a lot.
Yes, I
hope we unpacked what's going on here in a clear, concise manner, because it's crazy and it gets crazier by the day. And just when you think things are stopping or are getting less crazy, they get more crazy. So we're glad that you're here to lend us your expertise and leading us, curating some of this reporting that we're doing from the boots on the ground where you are.
Thanks for having me, and the summer will be hot.
Yeah, and we'll have you back on. And we had you on in, I believe, January or late December, and now we're in the spring. We'll have you on in the summer, and we'll do another update. Thank you, Ken, so much.
Take care. Thank you.
Have a great weekend, and for everybody at Original Gangsters Podcast, for Benny Behind the Glass, please like, share, and subscribe. Original Gangsters Podcast, uncovering the underworld, one city, one region, one country at a time. We'll see you guys next time.
Thanks.